Texas Talking. Oh, what was that that you said? Texas Talking. Oh, gonna hoop upside your head. Texas Talking. Tell me, who can you trust when Texas guys are in Texas?
Hi, this is Lois Kim, Executive Director of the Texas Book Festival. Our 18th annual book festival rocked the state capitol last weekend, and I'm proud to say it's the only time of year when a discussion at the capitol about the road not taken has nothing to do with transportation funding. Now here's your TribCast host, literary legend Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the TribCast for the final week of October. Joining me is editor-in-chief and CEO Evan Smith.
Boo.
Executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy, what's that all about?
It's Halloween, Ross. Keep up.
Tomorrow.
What are you going as
tomorrow
for Halloween?
I'm going to go as Ben Philpott.
What are you going as, Reeve?
That'll
just
get you
just
a rock.
Just be a voice.
What are you going as?
I'm going to go as a reporter.
That would be a costume, yeah. Honestly.
Ben Philpott, the host of Agenda Texas and from KUT and the Texas Tribune.
Hello.
You going as John Ailey?
I'm about a foot shorter than him. But
oh, yeah. Well, that's the only thing that would stop
yes,
people.
Yes, that
from...
ruined it. Todd, what are you going as? He's miming.
He's going as you. He's going to go as Evan Smith.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm going as Dante de Blasio.
Really?
It's a very esoteric joke that nobody around here gets.
You get the hair for it.
Not all of us are New Yorkers.
Thank God. I include myself.
Exactly. I say the same thing. Thank God.
All right. Well, let's talk about Texas stuff. Specifically, why don't we begin with the issue of having to sign an affidavit in order to vote? This has become a headline making.
You
got to sign a thing to vote anyway. You got to sign that little thing. That
well,
says,
let's
yes,
back up and
so
see
you're
what
one
the
of those
situation is.
You're one of those people who believes that since you have to show a picture ID to cash a check and to get on an airplane,
no,
you should have to show a picture ID.
Can we say what the issue is, though? Ben, why don't you catch us up on the affidavit?
Well, the issue is
great. Ben's going to explain it.
See, now they're delaying it while they just make fun of me.
This ought to kill some time. Go ahead.
The issue is that now that people are showing photo IDs, you've got two different names to match. You've got the name from your voter registration and the name that's on your photo ID. And if they don't match, you can still vote. It's not a provisional ballot. It's a absolute regular ballot that's immediately counted. But you do have to sign something that says, I swear that I am who I say I am.
And this has particularly affected two notable Texans.
Well, it's affected Wendy Davis.
Hold it, but it's not a provisional ballot.
It's an absolute. Yes,
this is not only right. In the event of.
That's exactly what Ben said while you were on your phone.
Interestingly, I was both on my phone and heard what he said.
And not listening.
But I was confirming what I heard because I actually assumed it would be provisional.
No, okay. It's the actual ballot.
Reeve is going to go for Halloween.
So it's not provisional. I'm going to go as a provisional ballot on Halloween.
My wife went as a hanging Chad one year when she was pregnant.
That's but a little embarrassing.
You're about a foot shorter than a provisional ballot.
Now I don't even know where we left off.
Just say Wendy Davis and
Wendy
Greg Abbott.
Greg Abbott did have trouble as well. Wendy Davis.
Did you not read Peggy Feacock's story?
Oh, I did. No, I'm sorry. Yes, because you tweeted it out. So Wendy Davis and Greg Abbott both have, you know, their middle names. On their ID, didn't on their voter registration. I'll say that I would have the exact same problem. My actual name is James Benjamin Philpott.
Scoop.
On my voter ID.
Scoop.
Hashtag breaking.
On voter registration.
Same first name as the governor. Weird.
On voter registration and everything else, I am Ben Philpott. So
you're screwed.
Had to sign the same. Well, I signed the little thing and immediately went in and voted. I understand that people are upset about this,
but I voted.
Yeah. I voted four times. No.
Matt Beebe's going to be pissed off at that.
Once is Evan Smith. No. I had a friend of mine who's
I have a friend who votes. My best.
No,
friend
I have
votes.
A friend who went on Facebook and
some
essentially
of
said, look.
My best friends are voters, yeah. Right?
I have a friend who went on Facebook and said, look, you know, I understand that there are a lot of people who are upset about the whole fact that we have a photo ID, but let's not put out misinformation. Let's not make people think that because their names don't match, they're not going to be able to vote, that they're going to be turned away from the polls, or they're going to have to do a provisional ballot. Let's tell the truth. The truth is, if you show up and the names don't match, you sign your name one time and you immediately get to vote and your ballot counts.
You sign the voting roster anyway when you vote, right? You walk in with, even if you don't have to have voter ID, this is what I'm talking about. You walk in, you got to sign something anyway. You got to sign two things. What's the big deal there?
Well, in all likelihood, the governor, who's voting as we sit here in a couple of hours at the House and Branch Library on on Exposition Boulevard right by my house.
Right, which I got cranky James about the Richard other day because they didn't open at 7:30. Right?
Probably right. will have to sign an affidavit.
Very similar problem to James Ben Philpott's.
Christopher question. Todd Weissman. Right?
Wow.
Our podcast producer is unlikely if he...
He's a
I
voter?
Do think if he voted...
I do think it's funny
he's
that...
He's one of those slacker non-voting types, I suspect.
I guess funny is not the right term. I find it interesting that, obviously, this is an election, Greg Abbott versus Wendy Davis, where the women's issues, the women's vote is going to be brought up to the forefront, and the idea that, you know, this is being promoted. I mean, I think All Things Considered on NPR has got a story coming with this afternoon on this, and they talked about... You know, it being a kind of a women's issue. And I think that's a little disingenuous considering, yeah, Todd and I both had to sign affidavits. So,
well, the
your parents didn't love you enough to give you a good first name.
they did give me, it's my dad's first name, too. Oh, my gosh.
Jimmy Ben to us from now on.
I think the pivot on this is
Chris
that the amendment that led to the affidavits existing so that you could sign an affidavit
right.
in order to cast a vote that counted immediately was Davis's amendment on the
was well, an affidavit.
Exactly. So I mean you'll see that coming out of her campaign they had a little quip where they said you know Abbott's lucky Davis had that amendment, otherwise he would have disenfranchised himself with his voter ID push. So I mean that's really sort of
hilarious.
That's the political pivot on that, and that's why people the voter ID issue has become it's getting a lot of national attention for potentially the Davis campaign says will potentially affect women.
You know, in some ways this doesn't really get to
everybody.
In some ways this doesn't really
women
get to the voter ID problem.
In the everybody category. You know,
I mean it's an effect of the voter ID thing, but it's not really the you know the turning issue in the voter ID
or even the expected
debate.
Issue. These are
right.
white folks.
Right.
I mean let's say what the
white people from both parties
proposition
right?
was here was that somehow this was going to disenfranchise
minority Democrats
right
and
minorities
well
it would also disenfranchise potentially minority non-Democrats, but the point here is these are not the cast of folks we expected to be in harm's way.
And they're not in harm's way, I think, is our point. Really, they're
right.
just having to.
You got
to
sign
an
extra thing.
Unless they have carpal tunnel syndrome, they're pretty much fine.
Unless they can't sign.
Yeah. See,
well. I didn't expect you to go there. That was actually.
That didn't come up
good.
During the.
Nobody mentioned
the
it.
Hearings.
No.
Well, speaking about people
this
that
is going well, isn't
folks
it?
Will someday. It was going well.
Same as every week.
I think there was a brief few seconds there where it was going really well, and it wasn't really at the beginning or now. But it was
it's definitely not now.
There was a moment in there where it sounded like an actual podcast.
Let's talk about folks that people may or may not be voting for in the future.
And they would be?
For example, Donald Huffines or John Corona.
So Donald Huffines is from the car family in Dallas. Huffines Chevrolet has been up there forever.
As opposed to the furniture family from Raising Arizona.
I get you're right. Yeah.
Unpaid Huffines.
Excellent.
You got dining room chairs and no tables. You don't got dick. That was the great line from Raising Arizona.
J.J. Baskin's going to be so upset. Promised him a
that
clean
was a
podcast.
Great. Trey Wilson, may he rest in peace.
Yeah, I've rented that movie one time just to watch the intro like 8 times
that
over.
Guy is the greatest actor of all time.
Fantastic.
Died of brain tumor or something like that. Brain cancer. He did.
What are you talking about?
He did. He not running for the Senate.
What was the question? Donald Huffines is one of the children of the Huffines. His brother's best known. James Huffines has been involved in politics for a long time, worked in Clement's administration.
Close
has been
to Bush, close to Perry.
Right, been a UT regent.
CEO for Texas of Plains Capital Bank.
Right. So he's sort of a known
chair,
guy.
Chair of the region twice.
He's a known guy in Texas Republican politics and would probably fairly be cast as an establishment Republican. And his brother, who is now running for his first public office, is not really running as an establishment Republican, but running as kind of
outside guy.
An outside guy, not necessarily Tea Party, but, you know, he's conservative. He's been a libertarian and says John Corona is just too liberal for the district and ought to be knocked off.
Since Jeff Wentworth's departure from the Senate, it is often said, perhaps unfairly, that Corona is the most liberal member of the Senate.
Well, the most liberal Republican in the Senate. And
liberal Republican,
right?
Of
and you know, this is
no Royce West.
It's a highly relative term. You know, if you're sort of on the left end of a very conservative party, that just means you're a little less conservative than some of the other people.
Well, only in Texas in 2013 would John Corona be a liberal. Let's stipulate that.
So he's jumping into this race with, potentially some money of his own. He's jumping in relatively late.
He has money.
The election is 120 days, you know, from now, basically, you know, more or less about 4 months from now. So he's coming into this a little bit late. He's a political unknown. Everybody in Dallas knows that name because they've seen that dealership sign for years and years and years.
Although he's not in the car end of the family, right?
Right, but he's a real estate developer.
He benefits from the
The name's known. It's like, you know, when Vandegrift Run, when Fred Brown ran for the Texas House and was a BMW dealer.
George P. Bush.
Right.
So is he a
surname beneficiary?
Is he a formidable candidate, or is he just a candidate that has thrown his hat in the ring?
He is a candidate, and it's a known family name, and Corona hadn't had a Republican primary of any note in a long time. And, you know,
and there are a bunch of people who are ginned up to defeat these so-called rhinos. And in theory, Huffines becomes the rhino hunter in that race, supported by the infrastructure that now exists
on
that end of the party.
And really, the question in that particular Senate district is whether that even counts. Is there a sufficient number of insurgent Republicans in that district to be any kind of a threat to an incumbent like Corona?
Because Corona's district, the Republicans in Corona's district, tend to be more of the old George H.W. Bush, noblesse oblige.
It's a mix.
Highland Park.
It's a mix. I mean, Highland Park, Irving's in this. He goes over to Linda Harper Brown's district, you know.
That's more conservative than
right. Some into Plano. You know, I mean, you know, there's some pockets.
What has Corona done? What's the case against him?
You know, they got 24 years of stuff. You know, he endorsed John Sharp back then, and he has actually given money to and raised money for other Democrats.
He keeps trying to raise the gasoline tax.
Yeah, one thing that.
Oh, didn't Patrick get mad at about this? He gave money to Zaffarini and West, right? Oh, that was part of that whole Patrick and Corona slap.
You know, one of the things Huffines mentioned when we talked on the phone the other day was that Corona has that Corona co-sponsored a thing with Royce West to name a highway after Barack Obama. Can you imagine?
Well, it doesn't get more liberal than that,
right? So off to the races.
So, I mean, if there's a change there, are we looking at like an entirely new Senate? It seems like there are lots of people leaving, lots of new people coming.
I thought that's what we had last session.
It's not entirely new, but you know, four or five seats is a big turnover in the Senate.
So we had five.
Makes Ross very emotional.
It makes him hoarse. The loss of Tommy Williams has caused him to get verklempt. So last time we had five. We had five people enter: Paxton,
Campbell,
Schwertner, Taylor. And
Pax, well, you said Pax.
There was one more.
Oops.
Department of Energy. There was a fifth one. Taylor Paxton, Kelly Hancock. So that was five. And I thought
nobody was willing to help you. Isn't that great?
Jerks. I thought that five was a lot. This time we're looking at Tommy Williams' seat. We're looking at Paxton's seat. We may be looking at Glenn Hager's
seat.
Right. We are looking at Patrick's seat.
Patrick's seat.
We're looking at Davis's seat.
Davis's. So that's five right there.
Right.
Well, Hager is an uncertain one.
Yeah, Hager, if Hager wins the controller's race, there'll be a special election. Right.
And then maybe Corona. We don't know.
Maybe Corona, maybe Van Depute if she runs for lieutenant governor.
No, she has a four-year. Oh, what if she wins?
Right, if she wins. Same thing as Hager.
Right. Foolish me.
I got an answer for this.
Suddenly it was 1982. I'm sorry. I'm now back to yelling.
So, yeah, I mean, you could get some turnover in the Senate, and they are, you know, they got a three and four chance of a new lieutenant governor. So,
boy, that race is getting interesting. You would have been forgiven this week for thinking it was entirely Patrick versus Staples.
Right. But it's a race for second place.
The Patrick people are taking a whiz on the Staple people all week this week.
So you can tell who everybody is, what everybody is seeing in their polls by who they're attacking.
Isn't it telling that Patrick considers Staples to be his greatest problem?
Right.
And we're going to have Staples at, by the time people listen to this, we'll have Staples across the street at the Austin Club.
And his first name is not Todd. He'll have an affidavit probably.
Affidavit. Gobe?
Gobe Staples, that's his name.
Gobe actually changed his name.
So he's fine.
All right.
Okay.
As far
Gobe,
as I know.
Gobe is Dan Patrick's
birth name.
Last name.
Right.
That he has legally changed.
So so Staples, right. with whom right. we'll have a conversation tomorrow as we sit here, Patrick has been attacking Staples this week over in-state tuition, over voting for a bill that would permit illegal immigrants or undocumented persons more properly to have driver's licenses, and then a bill over health care for undocumented persons.
Right.
He's killing him from the 2001 session.
Well, when you've served and you have votes to defend, this is what happens, right? And the Staples is saying basically, I've feel differently about these things.
Right.
But the problem is you're susceptible.
This is now.
You're susceptible to the old for it before it was against it.
You have your record. And, you know, if Jerry Patterson comes onto their radar, and this isn't assessing Jerry Patterson's chances, but if he comes onto their radar in a way that they feel like they need to attack him, they're going to go after all of the things that he voted for in a Senate that had more Democrats in it and where you had to cut more deals with the Democrats in order to get through.
Do you think Patrick, in this case, has made strides in solidifying the rightward end of the primary electorate by attacking all these guys? Do you think this is working? Do you have any sense of this?
You know, my sense is that the attacks and the things on the top that you're seeing in press releases and stuff aren't really the fight. That you know, they're doing the organizing and they're doing the town halls and they're doing all of those kinds of things, and that's more important to this than the sort of the visible attacks that we're seeing. I think the visible attacks are fodder for those town halls and things, but I think if Patrick is making progress, and I think he's making some, it's with nuts and bolts grassroots stuff and not with his sort of, you know, what he's saying in the press and that kind of stuff.
Didn't Patrick start off the race as the most concerned? I mean, didn't he already have the mantle heading?
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, Jerry Patterson was Tea Party before Tea Party was cool. I mean, he sort of owns that. You know, David Dewhurst has, having been cruised, has run really hard to the right. Staples has some credentials over there. I mean, everybody has a claim to this. Patrick is saying, you know, I'm the only one who.
And, he's the only true
believer.
But
everybody's saying some version of I'm the only one who. And the question here is, everybody looks at it. It's a four-person race. Everybody sort of assumes, you know, unless you catch lightning and win without a runoff, there's going to be a runoff. So you've got to outrun at least two people.
Right.
Right? You want to, you know, so.
And you attack tells us who you think is in the race.
And it may tell you, I'm curious about this. Are they not attacking Dewhurst right now because they think Dewhurst is the guy who's in the runoff against somebody? Or do they think Dewhurst, having lost before this electorate before, doesn't make the runoff?
I think they think Dewhurst is not viable.
I mean, it's kind of an interesting.
I think they think Dewhurst is not viable going into a runoff. I don't know whether it's plausible that Dewhurst doesn't make the runoff. Or I think it's possible that he doesn't make the runoff. But,
right.
But the Patrick people, I think this is the battle for second, or the battle for first, as the case may be, assuming that Dewhurst's name ID and history of running statewide guarantees him a certain amount of the vote.
So it's the battle for second, which would ultimately lead to first.
Well ultimately leads to May.
I mean, that the person who, if somebody got in a runoff with Dewhurst, that they would be cruising him as Cruz cruised him.
You know, and we're in this environment now for the second time, but really, you know, in some ways this is the first time that the difference between the old primary runoffs and the new ones is really, you know, it really changes the game. It used to be that the runoff was 5 weeks later, so it was an extension of the primary election. And now it's like 10 weeks later. It's a completely different election. So after March 4th, they're going to reset and start raising money again and have this race toward the end of May when they have the runoff election. So I think, you know, the old thing of save a little money for the runoff, nobody's going to do that this time. They're all going to use every single resource they've got to get through March 4th. And then if you're still alive on March 5th, then you start rebuilding.
Oh, my God. They also want to get to 50%, worse than hell, because they don't want to have themselves subject to the same thing that we saw last time.
Right. You know, one of the problems that they're going to run into is, you know, you can't really advertise before Christmas.
Nobody's paying attention.
They'll do some. You know, I think we'll see some things from – I expect Dewhurst to be up early.
Patrick's already up on TV.
But not in a broad way. And I expect, you know, these guys to, you know, start setting the table, a couple of them. But most of them aren't going to be on TV until January. And then everybody's going to be on TV. There's four people running for lieutenant governor, three running for AG,
and
38
point,
people running for controller.
Aren't we looking at almost certainly a runoff in AG, railroad commissioner,
not
ag commissioner.
Right. Yeah.
Ag commissioner.
Controller.
I mean, there's 100,000 people. Well, you could get the controller's race is the one in which you might not have a runoff.
Well, there's five people in it.
You might not have a runoff.
But, you know, you're assuming that anybody's going to know who any of those people are. I mean, Glenn Hager's
I've been assuming it all along.
Well, Glenn Hager's known in his part of the state, and Harvey Hildebrand's known in his part of the state. But unless they can get through, this is kind of where I'm going. If everybody in all of those races is advertising in January and you've got this wall of political ads up, it's really hard to break through. And it's going to be really hard to get your name known in
figure out what they're running
in
for.
That kind of a traffic jam on television. I think if you've got a name that rhymes with something, you probably, or your name is Bush,
Like Bilderbrand?
Yeah, right. I just think people are going to have a really hard time breaking out.
I have a question about where all the, since we were talking sort of about the all the changes in the Senate. One of the themes sort of every year since I've been here, which isn't that long. I think my first session was in 2009.
So last year.
Yeah. Every session I've been in, there's been this thing like, oh, no, the Senate is turning into the House. They're, you know, they don't. Since you mentioned back when Jerry Patterson was around, that people would cut deals and cooperation.
We all thought that the addition of Hancock, you know, old what's his name, Paxton, Campbell, all those guys, Schwertner, all the Taylor, people whose yeah. names we remember and don't, in the Senate, it was going to just make it, you know, crazy. I mean, it was just going to be all this,
and that's what I mean by becoming everything. The House.
And the Senate was the sort of rational actor.
Well, until they broke down
at the end. Yeah.
Well, except
and
at
I,
the end.
Well, but, and I think that they broke down at the end in part because they didn't have a collaborative idea of how to go through a filibuster. You know, let's bust that lady in public, or let's just let it filter out and we'll come back tomorrow morning.
I'm thinking back to the vote that the Senate took to take money out of the rainy day fund for infrastructure.
Right.
It was 31-0. I was with Schwertner, who is a very conservative member of the House and is a very conservative member of the Senate.
Right.
Not long after that vote, and I said, "Were you absent that day? I mean, how is it that you all voted for this?"
What did
this
he say? I-35.
He said, "Look, we all think that this is the right way to go." I mean, and I think right. so. I think what happens, the Senate has a tendency to tamp down some of that. I mean, honestly, a Senate with Steve Toth, if Steve Toth were to win that race,
right.
Donald Huffines.
Right. If they, you know, I think the Senate is getting more conservative.
Van Taylor replacing
Paxton.
In this last Paxton. Session.
Paul Betancourt.
Do you think Van Taylor is going to be substantively more conservative than
no,
Ken Paxton?
Yeah. But
you know what? Ken Paxton was quiet, relatively speaking, in the last session. I don't think Van Taylor has a quiet setting.
Paxton was more quiet in the House too. Taylor has been front and center.
Van Taylor is more of a at the mic kind of making
the issue set in the regular session wasn't as partisan an issue set as it has been in the past. They came in and they said, "Let's do infrastructure, let's do water, transportation, a clean budget, let's put
and
the money back in."
And if you have Patrick as the lieutenant governor next session,
I think if you put a bunch of conservatives in there and you throw in an issue like, you know, any of the social hot button issues, any of the fiscal hot button issues.
Clearly immigration. If Patrick is the lieutenant governor after the stuff he said in the last couple of weeks, SB1 is going to be no more in-state tuition.
SB2 will be vouchers.
Yeah. And so you're going to have a Senate that is going to react to that on the basis of who those people are. It's going to be really important. The difference between Toth and Creighton may seem not – I suspect that Creighton is likely to be more of a Schwertner, the kind of the Tea Party guy who gets into the Senate and becomes a little bit more of a play by the
rules. He wasn't a Tea Party guy, Creighton.
Creighton's a big Tenth Amendment guy,
right? But he predates the Tea Party.
I guess my point is that the difference between Toth and Creighton temperamentally,
right,
is an example of what the Senate would be like depending upon the outcome of that race. But Betancourt's very conservative. Van Taylor,
well, and I think you're right that it may all just come down to who's sitting in the lieutenant governor's chair,
governor, or even Dewhurst as lieutenant governor. You may have a very different climate.
Well, on the other hand, if they don't think that the lieutenant governor who's elected is sufficiently conservative. Now you've got a more conservative, a larger conservative element inside a Republican caucus that will be voting on rules and talking about whether the lieutenant governor ought to be able to do this or that or the other
thing. Well, to Reeves' point, let's assume ideologically that Paxton and Van Taylor are awash, right? And let's assume Patrick and Betancourt are awash, okay? Williams and either Toth or Creighton is not awash. That's more conservative.
I think Williams and Creighton is more or less awash.
That's interesting. I wonder about that.
I think the whole Senate's a wash, honestly.
Is this podcast a wash? Is that where you're going with this?
You know, I just had one quick question before we went. Is anyone surprised is anyone surprised that Senator Cornyn doesn't have a hot and heavy Tea Party candidate?
I know a guy who wrote a column about
against him.
Did you see David Barton? There's some talk, a draft David Barton movement.
I didn't see that.
Want to explain who David Barton is?
David Barton is the
former vice chairman of the
Texas Republican Party. He's the founder or head of wall builders.
Right.
Oh yeah.
He was the vice chairman of the party. Right.
He's the guy who lives in Aledo. He has that massive safe built into a mountain. He collects historical documents. He believes that the separation of church and state is a fiction.
Right.
He wants to. That's a wall he wants to remove.
And unbuild. Yeah. He wants to unbuild that wall. David Barton apparently is thinking about this. There's a Facebook group that's a draft David Barton for the Senate thing. A lot of the people who would support a generic Tea Party from the rightward end of the party kind of candidate.
You pointing at Ben?
Would love.
Yes.
He's the only one that seems to be paying attention to me. It's like old Ross on his phone, Todd on his phone.
This is, I remember, yeah, anyway.
I was busted
Evan
on.
Evan Smith commenting on somebody being on their phone.
I was busted
this.
On
this
for this.
A great
I can,
world.
You can play that game, bub. I think that
we
if
got
Barton,
it from you.
I think if Barton ran, I think it would be, a, I think that would be a pretty significant.
Well, I've just been, it's
late
mean,
to get into a federal race.
It is, but, you know, if you consider the Tea Party vote as a ready, you know, campaign apparatus. I mean, it seems that.
And I don't.
You don't?
I don't. I don't think they prove it.
Boy, in
that.
A primary, I think they'd be pretty strong. I mean, they have been in individual district primaries.
I think they are if they know who you are. You know, I don't know that a David Barton or anybody else can get together the money quickly enough with federal campaign finance limits to throw a serious race at John Cornyn. It may be that if you could get a David Barton up to the name ID and the issue ID that voters said, I know who David Barton is and what he stands for, and I know who John Cornyn is and what he stands for, and then they might make a choice. Cornyn might have a race in that case. I think it's too late unless there's some giant pile of money like Club for Growth or something. Did we see this a couple of years ago? That's ready to throw in.
Couldn't that be?
Well, maybe. I mean, they're sort of tied up with states where it's cheaper to do this. Places like Kentucky, places like Tennessee, true. Right? I mean, the problem with taking over a Senate seat in Texas has always been, for both parties, for all factions, it's a really expensive place to run, and you can win a Senate seat cheaper in one
million
of those
dollars
states.
Is 1 week of media, right?
No. $2 million is 1 week of media.
$1 million is
half a
three
week.
3 days, right.
I can do that, man.
That's right.
Yep, well,
right.
let's bring this back around to the things that our elected officials are signing their affidavits in order to vote for. By the time we have our next podcast, the propositions on the ballot will have been settled. What are we expecting to see there? We don't have that much time. Give us a quick rundown. Ross, you are inhaling. So.
Every one of us gets to vote for about 18.9 people, if the turnout's what it was in constitutional election in 2011.
It's suck.
Nobody votes. 690,000 people voted last time. The big one's the water deal. The water deal is Prop 6.
Is it going to fail or pass?
Everybody's, I think it's going to pass. Everybody's watching Harris County because there's a bond election on the flower pot known as the Astrodome.
And a mayor's race that's not terribly interesting, right?
And Anise Parker's on the ballot. So everybody thinks, you know, 30 to 35% of the turnout will be in Harris County where they don't have watering restrictions.
Right.
You know, they're on the green side of the green-brown line here. But water isn't as salient an issue. So I think it'll pass.
And you have everyone is lined up behind it and on the sort of part like the elite, political elite. You have Perry, you have Abbott,
well,
you have
but
Davis.
You do, but nobody's
but
coming out to vote.
The grassroots people are not for it, and they're the ones who turn their people out.
They're not strongly against it. I mean, they're, you know,
sure they're strongly against it.
We've heard Deborah Medina, but you don't see a bunch of campaigns. You don't see a bunch of mail.
Didn't those guys say during the festival enough for it?
I think they're yawning.
Or are they?
Head of Save Our Springs is against it, right?
All right. So what are the other, what are the other things on the ballot before
I'm
people?
Just gonna,
start?
I'm gonna just go out there and say I think it actually could not. I think it probably
I
passes.
Think it could,
but I think
not
it
pass.
Passes by a small margin. I think it could still fail.
You're taking the bold stance that it will likely pass, but could fail.
When we polled it, water
yes,
was
bold.
When we polled 52%. It, Prop 6 was beating not Prop 6 by 2.5 times. It was 52% to 19%.
I think
the undecideds break the same way. It's 2.5 times.
I think that's people that are talking to somebody on a phone and not walking to the polls. I worry that if 600,000 people come out and vote,
undermining our polling for low these 4 years.
They have cell phones now. You can
break,
walk
in case
and
of
talk.
Emergency. Break hands.
No, I just mean in turn. I mean, if you, of course, people are going to be for water when you call up and ask them. It's just I don't know that.
I don't know if it's going to translate to people actually going out when you're talking about 5 to 7% of the state actually voting.
Okay, so what else is on the ballot?
Well, the only
reverse mortgages.
Reverse mortgages, which we already have in the state, but now you can do a reverse mortgage all in one fell swoop instead of getting a conventional mortgage and then getting a reverse mortgage. The big one that I'm interested in, or I don't know if it's a big one, is whether or not the entire state of Texas is going to let Hidalgo County tax people for its hospital district at the exact same rate that all the other hospital districts in the state have.
This is why nobody votes in these things. I mean, you're doing weird statutory. No, you're doing these little tiny statutory law changes inside. It's the class you ditched in high school.
Also, we are the ones who theoretically give a crap, and even we can't muster any enthusiasm.
I voted. Right? Have you voted?
I've voted. Not voted. No.
I voted.
James Ross Ramsey.
Do I have to vote? I thought not voting was the way. I thought that was
not voting is a choice.
That was how we demonstrate that we're not biased.
Oh, not voting? Don't vote.
This
in primaries.
Isn't a partisan election.
You didn't vote in the proposition primaries.
I don't vote in primaries.
I allowed Proposition 6 and Proposition 5 to work themselves out. Whoever was going to win that.
I don't vote in primaries, but I vote in all the Mookie elections. This is a Mookie election.
The reason I think Hidalgo County Hospital District is interesting is because you could have. If there are Tea Party people that end up coming out to try to defeat Prop 6, of course they're going to check no to a tax increase in Hidalgo County, even if they live nowhere near it. And I just think that's unfortunate.
Well, before this gets too interesting.
Yeah, sorry.
We should invite people to send questions and comments to tribcast@texastribune.org. We'd like to thank Shine Herbs for doing our music. And on behalf of Ross, Ben,
James.
Evan, and James, Todd, James. Yeah. This is Reeve. James Reeve Hamilton. Thanks for coming. Texas talking about Texas talking, baby. Texas talking about it. Texas talking, baby. Texas talking.
Ross
whispered thing.
Ross, people have sex.